John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
Well, of course, as the busy news week continues, and it'll switch gears a little bit. Yesterday was the strangest reporting day for training camp in the National Football League I have ever witnessed. You know, with the opt-outs, about 29 opt-outs, and all the COVID testing positives, which were expected. That was unusual. And of course, we find out even some guys that are on the street are thinking about not playing this year. Larry Warford, guard, three-time Pro Bowler, who was cut by New Orleans, he's going to opt out of the season. Then, of course, today you kind of switch gears a little bit because we should be hearing something from the colleges, SEC. You know, we're down to eight colleges right now that the conferences that have decided they're still thinking about playing this fall. And so everybody else in the FCS is pretty much in the spring. And we should get a little bit of guidance from the SEC, maybe a little bit out of the Pac-12 because they've kind of changed directions. They're basically saying that they didn't want to have football games if people weren't going to be on the campus, students, and a lot of the Pac-12 schools aren't going to be in there. But we'll have some news on that today. Nothing definitive. ACC, by the way, is going to delay any decision. But this is a critical time right now to start planning, but also it's a critical time to get into the five biggest stories of the day.
Number one.
You know, when you're in that arena with somebody and you're having those negotiations and you're trying to figure out what your future is going to look like and what your windows of opportunity look like, you know, we just felt like we should go for it. And you can't sit here and preach that you're going to be a consistent championship caliber football team and not be in something like this and go for it.
Well, that was John Snyder, who was on the Peter King podcast from NBC, talking about the Jamal Adams trade and getting into a lot of the details. And again, some of the background on that is that they never expect to get a player this highly rated. You know, he was, what, I think 26th or something like that by the NFL Network as far as that. I mean, he's a Defensive Player of the Year candidate. And so, actually, 27th. And think about the guys that he's around. He actually tops Richard Sherman, who's 28. He's a little bit one behind Von Miller, T.J. Watt. I mean, you're talking about sack guys that can get double-digit sacks. He's that good. And so, two thoughts on the way this deal came together, because they've been working on it for many, many months, is that the thinking was, okay, if you get a guy like this, I mean, and as long as he's willing to not ask for contract money this year, which he isn't, then you get him at a bargain because you get him for about $3.6 million. Secondly, then you worry about the contract next year. I mean, you get a player who's going to compete for Defensive Player of the Year. And also the other thing is that he's a positionless player in the sense that you need these guys, particularly in this division. And what I mean by positionless is that, you know, he can play linebacker. He can play safety in the box. He can play a little slot cornerback. He can rush the quarterback. He can go sideline to sideline. And you need that with the new type offenses. Like, for example, you got the spread offense down in Arizona with the mobile Kyler Murray. You've got the two running offenses that are real pronounced with the Rams and the San Francisco 49ers, and he's a guy that can also get to the quarterback. So you can see, and the other part of this is that, in getting Adams and giving up two firsts, a third, and Bradley McDougal, they saved a little bit of money under the cap this year. That's not the big thing. You know, there's going to be questions for all general managers coming up. Just like I mentioned, there's only eight conferences right now in the FCS that are at least thinking about playing this year, and that means all the other players, even if they opt out of not having the spring season, you have no look on them for over a year, and you don't know what you're going to get necessarily. So in the end, it was expensive, but I think they made a decent deal. This is one I look at the same way I look at Pittsburgh when they got ripped for trading a first to get Minkah Fitzpatrick. He ends up helping them be one of the better defenses in the league. Same thing, I think, that Jamal Adams can come in and help this defense get so much better. And so I just think that it's a win-win. It was a win-win for Pittsburgh, win-win for Miami getting a first-round pick, win-win for Seattle getting Adams, win-win for the Jets, getting all those draft choices.
Number two.
Swung on and missed strike three. Slider down and away, and the inning is over.
And some barking going on out to towards Joe Kelly.
And Kelly turns around, and both the Dodgers and the Astros are mouthing off, and Kelly finally arrives at the dugout, and he is still talking. And the benches are beginning to clear. Oh, knew it was nearly inevitable. Correa is barking. Kelly is barking. The teams have emptied the benches. It goes without saying there's not a whole lot of social distancing going on at the moment.
So you can see that the Astros are now paying the price, as a lot of people thought would happen. But again, no discipline coming down from Rob Manfred and the league. But, I guess Kelly hit two batters, and, then they had the words going back and forth. And naturally, it's going because, the Dodgers were victimized by the spying that was done by the Astros in the 2017 World Series. So Joe Kelly, getting his words off and threw right behind Alex Bregman in the sixth inning, struck out Carlos Correa, and then they exchanged word afterwards. And then here come the benches. No punches were thrown. No mask, I guess, came off or anything of that nature. But not surprised to see the Astros now coming people after them for what they did.
Number three.
The pitch to Rendon, swung on, and a well-hit ball down the left field line and deep, and this one is gone. Goodbye, baseball. Anthony Rendon, his first hit as an Angel, is a home run. Just fair down the left field line here at Angels Stadium, and the Angels now lead it by a score of 10-2.
Well, not a good one. Mariners losing 10-2 to the Angels. Justice Sheffield struggled early. He couldn't really command the pitches and all that, and he finally ended up, like so many of the pitchers right now, having problems in the fourth inning. It seems like now this pitching staff, okay, you're fine in that first go-around, but when we start to go around the lineup the second time, then there's problems. Sheffield walked four on Tuesday. DH Tim Lopes has a good start going. He had a solo home run. Right now he's batting .462. So the series is going to continue tonight. Justin Dunn's going to be on the mound for the Mariners. Game time's going to be at 7:10 with a pregame at 6.
Number 4.
When you speak to people at the team level, they talk about more concerns. And, having the protocol referred to as Swiss cheese is what I hear. And there doesn't seem to be uniformity. There seems to be a lack of, complete understanding about what needs to take place. That's clearly what happened with the Marlins in terms of the timing, in terms of the conversation within the team. And it does feel like that, in some respects, some of these groups are calling audibles.
That's Buster and Olney talking about the mess that's known as the Miami Marlins. Ken Rosenthal reporting another Marlin tested. So that's now, 12 Marlin players that have... are we 15 right now? I mean, it's ridiculous. I think it's now 18 in the organization. And so the MLB announced that all Marlin games through Sunday will be suspended. And so the plan is to play 57 games in 56 days to make up for the time missed. The Orioles, meanwhile, are supposed to play the Marlins on Wednesday. Now they're going to play the Yankees. By the way, the Yankees and Orioles, I don't think, had any positive tests. But, announced that no other team has positive tests in their last round of testing. That's encouraging, but it's bad for the Miami Marlins. And again, they put themselves in that position. You wonder what they did, because they're the victims right now, but it looks like they may have done some things to become the victims.
Number 5.
Joey Bosa reported to Chargers training camp Tuesday. He appeared to keep a poker face, telling the team camera simply, "I made it." Hours later, ESPN's Adam Schefter reported that Bosa agreed to terms on a record-breaking extension. The standout defensive end will earn $78 million guaranteed at signing and $102 million in total guarantees over a five-year, $135 million deal that keeps him with the Chargers through 2025.
So well-deserved, Joey Bosa getting the $27 million a year deal, but don't go overboard, because remember, people were going overboard when I heard the Patrick Mahomes deal was $45 million a year and reporting it with the incentives and everything being over 50, where in reality it was a 12-year deal that kept him on the team for $39.8 million. Still a great deal, and this is going to be a great deal, but the way it's going to be structured, because I think we've seen a little bit of a pattern. We haven't seen the Myles Garrett deal yet, but the pattern seems to be you keep the cap numbers as low as you can the first 2 years, and you may not get as much money as you would normally expect, because again, the caps are going to be tight next year, maybe the year after that. And so we'll see how it goes, but a great deal for the Chargers in getting him done. $78 million on the guarantees is kind of right in line with maybe it's a little bit high. We'll see if it's going to be 78, but he was entering the final year. He was scheduled to make $14.4 million. We'll see how much of that, and it may just stay at the $14.4 million. We've seen that happen with Chris Jones. And his career. Bose has had 40 sacks in 51 games and is absolutely an absolute technician as far as how he uses his hands and how he does things. He learned that from his father, who was in the National Football League. Listen to the show via the 710 Sports app. It's powered by the Dubin Law Group. Coming up next, we'll talk about how Jamal Adams is going to make the Seahawks defense better. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Under Further Review with John Clayton.
We'll review the play.
Well, under further review, like, everybody's still evaluating the Jamal Adams trade, and I think that I still label it a win-win for both teams, mainly because certainly you got a Jets team right now that's in the rebuilding process. They're going to get, you know, three key draft choices and a good safety in Bradley McDougal, and Seattle gets a guy that is one of the best defensive players in football. It's kind of back and forth on what people think, but also I think that the added part of this, he's even more important in this division. We talked to Bucky Brooks yesterday from the NFL Network, who was a former player, scout, is a great evaluator of talent, and he talked about the changes in this league where now you really do need, with the mobile quarterbacks, the spread offenses, some kind of a position of player that can basically, you know, chase people down, you know, chase the quarterback, get the sacks in the quarterback, and that's what Jamal's specialty is, along with making big hits, you know, running sideline to sideline, if necessary, covering a big tight end. He has all of the above. But let's see what Michael Bumpus says when he was on today with Danny and Gallant.
How will Jamal Adams make this team better?
Jamal Adams will make this team better because he will have the Chancellor effect. Will he be Chancellor? I'm not going to put that type of pressure on the kid, even though he is a baller. But there's something about going across the middle of that field when you see that safety rolling down, you see number 33, and he's going to hit you. He's going to make you think twice. Also, he's going to walk down into the box, and if they do send him on blitzes, he's going to get after that quarterback. Now, I believe McDougal had two sacks last year, two or three sacks last year. And I went back and I looked at his sacks. I looked at Adams' sacks. And they're pretty much kind of the same type of scenario. They walk up on the edge, blitz, and it just looks different when Jamal Adams does it. He gets there faster, and he delivers a blow when he gets to the quarterback. McDougal's a good ball player. I'm not knocking McDougal at all, but he doesn't have the weight in the rear like Adams does, man. He gets to that quarterback, and he's going to feel him. And once Adams hits you once, you're going to be thinking about him the rest of the game. I don't think McDougal really struck that fear in anybody. What he hasn't done is interceptions, right? You want more interceptions from this secondary. So there's a knock there, but there's no denying what this dude can do. 10 tackles for loss last year. Jadeveon Clowney had 10 tackles for loss last year. So I guess you're replacing the tackles and you're replacing some of the sacks there. So this defense did get better. I know people are knocking them. They didn't get better in places that they want them to, but like everyone's saying, Pete's working from the backside up. So I like what he's doing. I like Jamal Adams. He brings this aggressiveness and this swagger to this team. Him and Quandre Diggs bring this swag to this defense that we haven't seen in a long time. I'm not going to compare them to that other group because we have to put these guys on the field and see what they can do. But I love the attitude that he brings. I love the intensity that he brings. And as a receiver, if you're going across the middle and you hear some footsteps and you know there's a big 6-something, 200-pound dude going downhill trying to smack you, you're going to think twice. So that's what he brings to the table. Love the intensity. Love the swag. Let's get it going.
Yeah, I think, again, that's what's going to be the big thing about this is what he does to this defense because he added speed. I mean, McDougal, as great as he was, and he was really good here, was more of a 4-7 guy where you've got Adams at 4-5-6, and he's got the range. And so now you've got two safeties that have range, and Earl Thomas obviously had it back in the day, potential Hall of Fame guy. Cam Chancellor wasn't much the range. It was the hitting, the leadership, all the smart plays, putting everything in place, and that was good. But I think Jamal really is going to add a lot to this defense. And he comes in, and the team has $17 million. We're still waiting for the deals to get on the books as far as the remaining draft choices that all got signed yesterday. But I think this defense has got to be better. And overall, you look and see who's Pro Bowl caliber on the defense. You got now three guys in the secondary. Bobby Wagner. I don't know if you want to put KJ Wright in that category, but he had a very good year last year. And Jaron Reed. speed, even though he had the 10.5 sacks. You know, he didn't get Pro Bowl recognition 2 years ago, but I think you put him in that category. And when you start to talk about that many good ones, then, you know, you can see that this defense is going to be better. Nobody gives it credit. Curtis, why do you think, I mean, I still go back and look at all the criticism this offseason, and it still goes down to, is like, hey, it's Clowney or bust. Clowney or bust. You don't get Clowney, it's a bust season for the defense. And I just don't agree.
I mean, there are definitely multiple ways that the Seahawks can arrive to a great defense, and I don't know if Jadeveon Clowney is the end-all, be-all to getting where John Schneider and Pete Carroll want this defense to be. And I think we've seen it in years past. They love building from the secondary forward, and this move would speak to that. And I think Jamal Adams fits that mold that they look for, definitely personality-wise. He's definitely cut from the same cloth as guys like Earl Thomas and Richard Sherman, where not only do they play at such a high level, but they back it up with their words as well. So there are definitely different ways for the Seahawks to arrive at a great defense. And even if they don't get Jadeveon Clowney, it doesn't mean that there are other opportunities. Or there aren't other opportunities out there. I think just with the way John Schneider has gone about this, I mean, who would have thought at the end of the 2019 season, specifically Seahawks fans, that we'd be sitting here on the verge of the 2020 season with Jamal Adams on the roster? I don't think anybody foresaw that, and rightfully so. It was so out of left field that, you know, but the way things transpired with Adams in New York and the way things could transpire elsewhere in the NFL with other players who are disgruntled or whatever, the Seahawks are in on everybody, John. They're in on everybody, and moves like this speak to that sentiment time and time again, and it's the second offseason in a row where we've seen them take a big swing like this very close to the season.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. And that's the thing. I think that, you know, it's not like they've closed the door on bringing in more talent. I mean, they were taking so much unfair criticism. You know, they made 10 moves in veterans, right? And where the 10 moves were, you know, they come in and they get, Quentin Dunbar. And I know that the Players Association filed an appeal on his behalf, along with DeAndre Baker, to see if they can, you know, shorten the commissioner's exempt list. But, you know, he's Pro Bowl caliber. And then, you know, they go ahead and add two starting offensive linemen. They added, a good tight end in Greg Olsen. I mean, they just didn't get the big names. Now that's the big name, and they're not done yet. And the great part for them, unlike a lot of other teams, they still have cap room this year and cap room next year. So they can still take another run at Jadeveon Clowney. But here's what's going to be interesting is that I don't know what's going on with Vic Beasley, because remember, Tennessee signed Vic Beasley to a one-year, $9.5 million contract, and he's a guy that sometimes you wonder, does he really like playing football? Well, guess what? He didn't show up yesterday, so I don't know if it's virus, I don't know if it's a lack of desire to play football, is he going to opt out? And if that's going to be the case, you know, then maybe Tennessee would up what they'd be willing to pay if they can get him in for a visit. Right now they can't get him in for a visit. And then some people think in New England that, you know, they might make a move for Clowney. But I can guarantee this, because, you know, Bill Belichick doesn't like to pay defensive ends. You know, he didn't keep Chandler Jones to a second contract. He didn't keep Trey Flowers to a second contract. And so with that in mind, you know, now what you wonder about is that would he be willing to go to 12 or 13 million? And I talked to some people today. No, not on a one-year deal. I don't think they'd be willing to do that. And so I think that, you know, the Clowney thing is still there, because, you know, Clowney, I don't know if he wants to be in training camp or not. He may not, but the Clowney thing's still available. You know, they're still looking at Damon Snacks Harrison, but at the moment he's debating whether to opt out this year and not play because of family reason. And when you saw that yesterday, it was pretty much the big guys and the family guys that opted out, you know, so that might not be a consideration. But overall, I still think in the end that, you know, they still have a chance to get Clowney, and they'll maybe find a way to get somebody else.
Yeah, and if they are able to get maybe one or two more pieces for that defensive line, maybe a pass rusher and a defensive tackle, a run stuffer to be specific, I think this puts Seattle's defense among the top half of the league, maybe even the top quarter of the league, because those are the two biggest pieces missing. The linebacking core is set. You've got, you know, a first-round pick in that linebacking core as well. The secondary we know is going to be the best, maybe the best position group on the team, and that's even without Quentin Dunbar. So when Dunbar comes back, hopefully at some point during the season, that defense, all of a sudden, if you add a couple more pieces to that defensive line, it's looking pretty, pretty stout.
Yeah, it really is. And so just stay tuned because things aren't done. Hey, also, you can tell your smart speaker to play 710 ESPN Seattle. Remember, you can always listen to 710 on your smart speaker or app. Coming up next are Wednesdays with Dave Wyman, John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Well, obviously, the big conversation piece right now is the Jamal Adams trade and the constant reviews and positives, criticisms. And again, I look at it as a win-win situation for both teams. I don't know. Dave Wyman, as you kind of study and look at Jamal Adams, what's your thoughts on the trade?
Well, I think, first of all, he's just a really, really good football player. So there was a lot of talk about, well, he plays up in the box. He's more like a linebacker, all the snaps that he took up there, and he's a blitzing guy. But it looks like he's blitzing, but he's not a lot of times. And I went and watched a film sort of breakdown where he's talking through the game and everything. I'm so impressed, John, by his understanding of football. I mean, his IQ is off the charts. So we talked about that on our show yesterday. We also, you know, if you want to say, and I saw that Brady Henderson wrote an article about how since 2018, there's been, this is the fourth time since 2018 that there's been multiple first round picks for a player. The other ones being Jalen Ramsey, Laremy Tunsil, and Khalil Mack. And, you know, Khalil Mack, I get the other two not so much, but a safety is so important to this defense. And that's what's become clear, John, because if you look since 2017, pretty much every number has declined defensively except for takeaways. So, and this guy will get you some takeaways, but he can play wherever, and he'll play in this defense. It's not like he's going to turn into a linebacker or anything like that. He is he can play in coverage, you know, and I don't see him using him as like a cover two, you know, like deep safety where the two safeties split the deep part of the field. He's much better up around the line of scrimmage, but he can play pass very well. And if you look at LSU, they had him deep a lot of times back when he was in college, and he just has an understanding of what teams are trying to do to him, not only especially in the run game, but in the pass game as well. So I just think it was a really aggressive move, but you know, the Seahawks tend to have late round draft choices as far as the first round goes because they win.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I think, you know, when people say, well, he's just an in-the-box safety, they don't know what they're talking about because they don't understand the changes in the game. And, I mean, you've watched since you played all the changes in the game over the last few years because, you know, offenses, you know, defenses adjust to offenses, offensive teams now are different than when they were when you played, and the difference right now is you're getting more college-type offenses being incorporated into the NFL. So, for example, with the spread offense and mobile quarterbacks, what you have now is you need for a positionless player, you know, a guy that can, you know, either rush the quarterback as a linebacker, a guy that can play as a strong safety stopping the run. He can match up maybe against a tight end. You have all those different things that are there, and it's like if they haven't studied the game, they don't know the changes because, I mean, you saw last year, as good as Bradley McDougal was, and he was very good, it's still hard to handle some of these offenses, and you got two tough offenses, three tough if you want to include Derek the same, in this division because you've got the running offense of Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay, and then you have, you know, Kyler Murray and the spread offenses, and that's why a positionless player does work.
Yeah, well, and he, like you said, he can play anywhere. And, you know, a lot of times the safeties would switch last year. McDougal would be free and Diggs would play strong, and I don't see them changing that. They can continue to do that. So, no, you're right. I mean, and he's probably the most hybrid of players in the league. I mean, you know, and it, saying that he's more of a linebacker, I don't believe that. I just think, you know, he's really good at reading the run. And, you know, like I said, you go through and listen to him and the way he talks about it. And I mentioned this on our show yesterday, David Shaw at Stanford, he talks about guys' verbal abilities and ability to explain what they're doing and know what they're doing. This guy's off the charts that way. So great football IQ. He can play the run. He can definitely play the pass. It's just not how the Jets used him necessarily. But I think the safety position, it's been clear to me over the last 3-4 years since Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas left, that that's the position that's really been hurting. And look at, you know, look at the boost they got when Quandre Diggs was finally healthy, and it started in that Monday Night Football game, went on like a 5-game streak where the defense, they were undefeated in that streak, I believe. Well, they lost to the Rams, but, you know, they got 16 turnovers in that, and that was half of their turnovers from last year with Quandre Diggs just roaming the backfield, making the corners feel comfortable. So those two guys together back there, I can't wait to see it. So, yeah, it's they got a really versatile player. As you said, positionless player, John. I think this guy might be, you know, as, I don't know, as balanced or as much of a hybrid player as you could possibly get on defense in the NFL right now.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, to say, okay, he's just a box safety. So where did the NFL Network and the players voting on the NFL Network Top 100 put Jamal Adams? Put him at 27. Okay, 27, 26 was Von Miller, 25 was T.J. Watt. They have Shaq Barrett and his 18-some sacks at 30, 32, yeah. Micah Fitzpatrick at 35. They've rated him one of the best defensive players in football because, I mean, you look at the, okay, so he's a little above Cameron Jordan from the New Orleans Saints, you know, Khalil Mack, who cost 2 first-round picks to the Chicago Bears, Nick Bosa, who was 17th rookie last year, and of course, you got the Chandler Jones. I mean, he's in rare company right now.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, you mentioned a couple pass rushers there, John. I think with adding him at safety, I said this yesterday on our show, I think they just added 10 sacks. And maybe he gets 2 or 3 of them, but just because they're going to be able to play tight and aggressive as they used to, it's going to allow the pass rush time to get there. So, I mean, I just think by default, he will add that many sacks because, you know, they just played so loose. They weren't aggressive. They didn't trust so much their defense. They gave up lots of yards, but they kept things in front of them. It was kind of like a rope-a-dope type of defense. But now I think they can play a lot tighter. They can play more aggressively. And this guy's a leader, too. That's the other thing that comes through with him is the passion. And it's not like they don't, you know, they're hurting for leadership. I mean, Quandre Diggs is a great leader. Bobby, of course, Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright. I mean, those guys are, Jaron Reed, they're the best. But this guy just brings a passion and a leadership that's just going to make this defense so much better. So, yeah, I it's interesting. I was asking the question, what's a reasonable, you know, expectation for improvement? Because on the NFL Network yesterday, they had, you know, points per game. Last year, they were 22nd. You know, yards per game, they were 26th. I mean, they were 29th in sacks, 28th in, or 26th in opponent red zone touchdown percentage. So, you know, and I think we asked you that, John. You said, yeah, I think they can move up to at least middle of the pack. Mm-hmm. And I'm not expecting them to go to the, you know, be the a top five defense necessarily, but I think they're going to be vastly improved.
Yeah, because, I mean, look at the fact that they've got, you know, 3 Pro Bowl caliber guys in the secondary. 4 if Quentin Dunbar gets cleared. By the way, the Players Association did file something on his behalf to try to get him off the commissioner exempt list. The and, you know, you look and you see Bobby Wagner's now, you know, certainly the best middle linebacker in football. Got a great rating from NFL Network on the vote by the players. You got, you know, one of the top 2 quarterbacks in the league. But on defense, and again, you have Jaron Reed, and they're not done yet. They still have cap room.
Right. Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. I mean, there was all the criticism that, oh, Schneider doesn't make, you know, any moves. And he's not, I mean, he's done it every year. I mean, Clowney last year, that seemed incredibly unrealistic. And yet it happened. And so a couple weeks ago, I said, look, I think there's a better than 50% chance that they sign, you know, either Jamal Adams, trade for Ngakoue, you know, get Clowney in here. But I'd say they're not done. Yeah, I agree. I think that, you know, you could get Everson Griffin. You could get a Jadeveon Clowney in here. And just think if they do find a way to pull off Clowney, get him in here, how we're going to think about this team. And especially with what you said, which Dunbar I've kind of written off, John, just because that is such a goofy situation. I mean, I've never seen anything like that. But if they do get Dunbar and do have a chance to get access to him, wow, this is going to be a much improved defense.
No doubt about it. And so now, you know, they came out of it okay as far as the opt-outs and everything else. By the way, have you ever seen a cutdown as strange as this with the 29 opt-outs, including a $9 million defensive tackle, Michael Pierce from Minnesota, six members, four starters from the New England Patriots, you know, Devin Funchess, the only wide receiver addition for the Green Bay Packers. I mean, it was wild.
Wow.
Star Mutilele.
Yeah. Well, I mean, some of the guys that, you know, there's a lot of fear, and especially if, you know, I've read that, you know, like if you have sleep apnea, some of the bigger guys, you know, you can be a little bit more at risk. And for some of the guys that have some money in their pocket and they're afraid that they're going to, you know, possibly spread it to their families, I guess you can understand. I didn't expect that many.
Mm-hmm. And we're not done yet because they have until August the 4th to still just continue if they want to do it or not do it. I mean, that's still to be determined.
Right. Yep. Hope for the best. And, you know, it sounds like the NBA is doing a really good job with it. Now, John, let me ask you really quick because I know we've got to go. But if they opt out, is there a chance to get back in?
No.
Okay. So once they opt out, they're out.
Yeah, once they're out, they're out. And so okay. You know, that's why you have guys like Damon Snack Harrison, who doesn't have a contract, debating whether to make himself available or not. You know, Larry Warford, a three-time Pro Bowl guard cut by New Orleans, he's not going to play. But if you opt out, you opt out, and you're not going to be able to come back this year.
Yep.
Okay.
All right.
And, of course,
we'll
that's
how it goes.
Wednesdays with Wyman. And, of course, David will be talking again at 4.
Sounds good, John. Thanks.
Okay. And, of course, be sure to check out the Professor's Notes at 710sports.com. The Professor's Notes are brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at Fife. Coming up next, we go behind the lines and check up on the National Football League. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Well, of course, I mean, right now, everybody's sorting some things out. We got news coming from San Francisco. John Lynch has just agreed to a 5-year deal. Remember, Kyle Shanahan agreed to a 6-year extension. So those two are going to be together now more than a decade, and it's a great duo. I mean, I think that you can compare it to the John Snyder, Pete Carroll relationship, because they seem, may not agree on everything, but they seem to work so well together, and it's a great balancing act because, you know, here they go from a 2-14 season with without Jimmy Garoppolo, and they end up going to the Super Bowl last year. And, of course, Garoppolo was not the guy that Shanahan favored. John Lynch had the opportunity to get him for a second-round pick and didn't budge on it and just moved and got him. And so then you look at the fact that Kyle wanted Kirk Cousins, but you don't know if you can get him because it would be a free agent move. But in the end, you know, it worked out well because they worked out for a Super Bowl team. So that was quite fascinating. And, of course, Curtis, they're going to be formidable, but I tell you what, they've got some major issues next year. And what I mean by major issues is they've got 29 free agents. They've got George Kittle to try to resign, who's now one of the, you know, according to the NFL Network, one of the top 10 players in football. And, you know, they have no cap room.
Yeah, they don't have hardly anything. And then they've also got George Kittle, who's up for a new deal here. They're obviously going to try to negotiate something with him this season. But yeah, John, they're up against it. And it kind of, you see these teams, they make the big splashes in free agency. A couple of years ago, the 49ers did just that with Quan Alexander and other guys on that defensive line. D Ford was a big acquisition for them. But everybody gets squeezed out, and we saw it this offseason. DeForest Buckner, they weren't able to retain him. They had to trade him to Indianapolis. They drafted Javon Kinlaw in his place, which, I mean, Kinlaw's going to be a good rookie, I think so. But to expect the level of production that Buckner had during his career in San Francisco with Kinlaw, that's some lofty expectations. He's one of the best down linemen in the NFL, and I don't know if San Francisco can replicate that right out of the gates here in 2020, and there may be more guys who get squeezed out just because they have to take care of all these other pieces that have made them into a contender in the NFC.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I think that you just don't realize is like, okay, you go out and all the people that are criticizing Snyder for not being aggressive and signing big players in free agency and that, look what's going on with San Francisco. Now, again, they've got a great core group because they've drafted real well. And particularly on defense, they're not going to have Deebo Samuel at the start of the year because he's got that Jones fracture, and now Kyle Shanahan admits he's going to miss some time. But what you can also see is that, they go big and they get Dee Ford at $17 million, and, they have to pay Eric Armstead, and they sacrifice their second-best defensive lineman, and letting DeForest Buckner go in the trade. And I can guarantee this next year, because now you're talking after the two-year guarantees are there, Kwame Alexander and Dee Ford are not going to be with this team. That, no, I can guarantee it.
Definitely not. John, yesterday Lamar Jackson, he reported to Baltimore camp. He was asked by the media just about his relationship with Antonio Brown, who remains a free agent. We know that the Seahawks and Russell Wilson have had some varying amounts of interest in him. Baltimore seems to be that other team that has interest in him. Right now, if you had to guess, which team has the most interest in Brown? Is it Seattle or is it Baltimore?
It's Seattle, because I don't see Baltimore doing it. I don't buy it. It's like, that's just not Baltimore. I know that they've got his cousin, but that doesn't mean anything. So I just don't see it happening. I really don't. And so Seattle, only because of Russell, wanting something like that. And again, I just can't see how that's going to be a fit, knowing one, he's going to have to serve a suspension. Two, we're still waiting for Josh Gordon to see if he's going to be available for the team this year, because I think he would resign and resign cheaply. But Russell's still pushing for it. But, what do you want? It's like you've got, if you're going to put resources into anything, put more into the defense on the defensive line. I mean, you've got good receivers, right? I mean, so why overdo it? But again, that's just me. And I think he's too much trouble for what he's worth.
Yeah, I think so too. I think the headaches that he brings an organization far outweigh his talent. And that's a lot of talent that he brings to an organization, which, I mean, kind of speaks to the kind of headache that he's been over the last couple of seasons. John, an interesting story on ESPN.com. Drew Brees, he talked about how it's going to be hard for quarterbacks to be a little bit more hygienic, I guess, during the 2020 season. And Drew Brees kind of notorious for licking his fingers before every snap, touching the ball, and then, that ball gets thrown around, touches everybody else's hands during a play. Just a odd thing that I think a lot of people haven't really thought about with football, but just something that quarterbacks now are going to have to be mindful of before each and every play. Like, hey, I don't want to get people sick. I don't want to get myself sick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a weird one, and I guess that's something that has to be addressed. I don't know if you can, eliminate something you've always done. That's going to be real difficult to do. But, you just kind of scratch your head at that one. But, you have to be conscious of it, but you change. That's what I wonder. I don't know if they change.
Yeah, I don't know either, because as we know, pro athletes are such creatures of habit. And somebody like Drew Brees, who's been doing the same exact thing for, almost 20 years now, mm-hmm, in his NFL career, that's going to be very, very hard, I imagine, for him to just kind of break that habit, cold turkey, like he's going to probably have to this season. John, opt-outs coming across the league, not too many to report today, but one interesting one yesterday that I don't know if he'll be able to collect the stipend that the NFL has sort of designated for players that are opting out. That'd be free agent Larry Warford, because he's not on a team currently, which, even though he's a part of the players' union, would that entitle him to the stipend that the NFL is handing out?
No, he's opting out and not getting a chance to get any money this year. And you're going to see more players like that. I mean, Damon Snacks Harrison is going through that process. Others have kind of thought through it, and again, you can see, and I don't know if Damon Snacks Harrison has sleep apnea or doesn't have sleep apnea. That's not the big thing. But, I mean, you saw the combinations of who was opting out, and most of them were either offensive linemen or defensive tackles. Not defensive ends, defensive tackles, because they're bigger and are more prone to maybe get the virus, you know, with either pre-existing conditions or the fact that they're big. And we'll see how many guys decide not to do it, but I think there's going to be a bunch.
Yeah, there's only been about a handful of guys who aren't linemen or guys who are bigger bodied mm-hmm. to opt out. I think D'Anthony Thomas, the wide receiver from Baltimore, Maurice Kennedy from the Cowboys, the defensive back, Devin Funchess. Those are really, and Patrick Chung, those are really the only guys who aren't necessarily big bodied guys. I think Marquise Goodwin, too, falls into that group. That have well,
it was kind of weird. Five of the six from the Patriots weren't big body guys. I mean, it was a good player in Dante Hightower, but I mean Brandon Bolden and Marcus Cannon, you know, was the only offensive lineman. But they and safety and all that stuff, a defensive end, you know, a guy who was a backup defensive end, he never really played. And so, and of course, a fullback and Dan Vitale. So five of the six weren't offensive linemen or defensive tackles. But that seems to be the trend, along with those that are, you know, just parents who, you know, their wife just gave birth, or you're worried about a recent birth in the family.
Yeah, and I would expect more guys to opt out as we get closer and closer to that deadline where they have to opt out. So that'll be about, what, next week when we find
out? August the 4th. I think, that's Tuesday.
Yeah, so that's the drop-dead date, and we'll know a lot more. And maybe Chance Wormack's not the only Seahawk who's going to choose to opt out.
Yep. Coming up next, it's going to be Four Downs with Sean Salisbury.